You're listening to Powder Radio, brought to you by Powder Magazine. Hey everyone, and welcome to The Storytellers, Episode 2. I'm your host, Sam Taggart, and thanks for joining me as I sit down with the writers, photographers, editors, and everyone else that makes Powder Magazine come together. In this episode, we'll be talking about our October issue, Volume 45, Issue 2, the future issue. And you know what? The future is now. We'll be hearing from Katie Baker, a staff writer for The Ringer and a contributing writer for Powder, about her experience putting together the October feature called The Fellowship about the National Brotherhood of Skiers, the largest assemblage of Black African-American skiers in North America. We'll also be hearing from Sierra Davis, Powder's assistant editor, about her trip to an off-the-beaten-path location, Monarch Mountain in Colorado. And lastly, we'll hear from Leslie Anthony, a former managing editor at Powder, who wrote this month's Morpheme, which is essays on skiing, and we've asked in our 45th volume past editors to answer two questions. Why is skiing important, and why do we ski? And without much further ado, here we go, it's episode 2. So we have Katie Baker on the line. Katie, how you doing?
Hi, good, thanks. Thanks for having me, Sam.
You got it. Katie, this is your first story for Powder Magazine. Exciting stuff. How'd you get the call?
Well, I got an email that with an assignment that was, in this area. So very excited to be writing for the magazine.
Amazing. And where are you right now? Paint us a picture for the audience. I know we're chatting via Skype, but where are you calling from today?
I live in Truckee, California, which is North Lake Tahoe, not too far from Lake Squaw Valley, and then down in the South Lake is Heavenly, which is where I reported this story. I'm reporting from my house right now in Truckee, California.
Beautiful. And let's dive into this story. It's called The Fellowship: The Storied History and Uncertain Future of the National Brotherhood of Skiers, which is the largest assemblage of Black skiers and snowboarders in the U.S. Why did you feel that Powder should cover this story now? What was the timeliness here?
Well, I think in general, with the idea behind the assignment is that there's always a timeliness to highlighting diversity, in society and in skiing and snowboarding. So there's that element to it. I think in diving into it further and learning more about the group and the people involved, some other things stuck out to me, including the fact that they recently were involved in opening something called the National Winter Activity Center in New Jersey, where they bought a ski mountain and are using it only for, teaching kids skiing. And then also just more broadly, in learning about this group, which has been around for a really long time, but is now facing a lot of the same pressures that the broader industry is facing, not just this segment of it.
It's important to cover it because it seems like it's the Brotherhood is on a downward spiral, but a decline in interest and participation. What was the overall feeling of the group that you met, and how was it walking in on that first day?
For starters, it says a lot about the group and the longevity of it that the answer to your first question is kind of that they acknowledge that 20 years ago was in many ways kind of the high point of the organization, and just in terms of attendance and buzz and just kind of the feeling that they would have it at some of these annual events. Because just to back up a little bit, basically what happens is this group, the National Brotherhood of Skiers, is kind of an umbrella group. And there's, dozens of regional, basically local ski clubs that are, that all kind of come together on a regional basis once a year, on a national basis once a year, and then also just hold their own trips and weekend events. So, they talk about, they'll reminisce about, Vail in the 90s, and Sinbad was there, and there were thousands and thousands of participants. And so it's definitely a different vibe now. But I do think the fact that it's been around for so long, you know, speaks volumes as to the organization of it, the passion behind it, the commitment. And so, you know, that leads into your second question, which is, what was it like to walk in the first day? The headquarters of the event was at the Hard Rock Hotel in South Lake Tahoe. And anyone who's ever been there knows that there's kind of a casino, little mini casino strip down there near Heavenly Mountain. So I walked into the Hard Rock on a Sunday morning. And the first thing I attended was their Gospel Fest, which is how they always kick off the week of the annual get together, which is called the Summit. So that was my first introduction to it. And it was such an introduction to how warm and passionate and spiritual and just familial everyone was. I mean, everyone was kind of seeing each other for the first time, embracing. And then, you know, I got to sit in on just like a really beautiful ceremony with lots of singing and lots of joy and people standing up to, you know, deliver their own remarks. So that was a great introduction. And then I think the next morning I got to go skiing with a group of folks. So everyone was great to speak with. And it was a really fun time for me.
There's a spiritual aspect. Did you feel enlightened around these people?
Everyone was so happy to be around. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, part of the fact that the demographics of the group are aging means that many people are retired and are just really loving their retirement. And it's very infectious. And, you know, they talk about the trips they've gone on, you know, just in the calendar year alone, and very jealousy making. But as a result, they just, you know, this isn't everyone, but a lot of the people I shared a ski lift with or, you know, talked to afterwards, you know, just talked about how much they enjoy skiing. And one of the founders of the National Brotherhood, Ben Finley, put it best. I think he said, in addition to skiing, he also, until pretty recently, because he's, you know, he's getting on in his years, but he used to also be involved with scuba diving. And he said, "My life has been spent from the top of the mountains to the bottom of the oceans. And there's not really anywhere I haven't gone." So it's, you know, that's just kind of the vibe that you're working with.
Explorers in the making. Yeah, that's great. And you shared the hill with a large number of these people. You know, was it welcoming? Were they immediately with open arms when you walked in the first day at Gospel Fest? And then as you shared the hill with them throughout the weekend?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go on kind of a guided, just a guided tour. It was I think a Monday morning, you know, Bluebird Day, and it was with a bunch of the VIPs, basically, you know, the regional club leaders or the people who work in the national organization. So that was a really fun time, and you know, I was totally just crashing their party, and everyone was so nice, you know, telling me their stories. You know, we were skiing and people were taking GoPro, you know, videos and tagged me on Facebook. And, so yeah, there was no, you know, it was very, very easy to start talking to people. And, they were, you know, it was one of those really great mornings where you take like every lift on the mountain, but you have no idea what lifts you're ever on because you're just, you know, you're just going everywhere. And it felt like we had the whole mountain to ourselves. So, that was a really fun introduction. And, I really appreciated everyone who, you know, talked to me on a ski lift while I was holding a notepad.
So the National Brotherhood of Skiers, the NBS, is, as you mentioned, an umbrella title for a bunch of different regional, sub-regional groups of people. And they have some really awesome attire. What was your initial reaction? We have a spread in the magazine, but it's these almost fraternity jackets from each club. Were you expecting such colorful attire from these skiers? Did you know that going in, or was seeing the sugar and spice heels on skis jacket a surprise for you on the first day?
Yeah, the I didn't know. The only reason I knew to expect it is when I spoke with Diana Starks, who at the time was the president. She said, just wait till you see the opening ceremonies. Everyone has their outfits on. So yeah, seeing them all, it really was like going to, you know, a fraternity rush or something. All the different regional groups had matching jackets, and it was really a festive atmosphere.
That's great. So you had a little bit of an expectation, Diana said. You better be ready for the first day. Now, did you have any difficulties putting a story of this stature together? There were a lot of people mentioned, a lot of details. What difficulties did you run into putting it all together?
I think just editing down all the information. I spent a lot of time just sitting down with people and interviewing them for, you know, 30, 40 minutes, and then going back and transcribing. And, you know, I wanted to write a story on each person. Like their lives were so interesting, and just the times in which they lived and partied and skied were so interesting. You know, a lot of people from Detroit, and you talked about skiing in the 60s and 70s. I mean, that it was just all such interesting stuff. So the challenge was kind of winnowing that down while also, you know, nodding toward the sort of broader context of the group and the fact that it is aging kind of undeniably. But so is, as you know, as one of the co-founders put it, so is any fraternal organization in America. You know, it's people our age don't necessarily join ski clubs anymore or join, you know, clubs at all. So you know, just being able to combine all those people with kind of this broader shift that's taking place was probably the biggest challenge. But you know, it was they all made it very easy for me to meet a lot of people and hear a lot of experiences.
As the younger generation opts out of clubs and fraternal organizations, do you see that the social media presence of this group, you know, do they hold it with utmost importance to rally the crowd?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I think for starters, one thing that's kind of interesting is that on the one hand, it seems like the NBS has increasingly partnered with a lot of like Vail Resorts Mountains, because if you think about it, if you're organizing a big group and you can, you know, use the resources they have, you can really, you know, and with the Epic Pass and everything, like that's, I think, made their trips be a lot more streamlined. At the same time, those are some of the same forces that are causing people not to join ski clubs. You know, if you can buy an Epic Pass, you don't need to join a ski club to kind of have that sort of group discount or that gatekeeping. So that was something that was interesting to me. But yeah, I mean, I think it, a lot of it is on a regional club basis. You know, some of the regional clubs are incredibly organized and big and have turned into basically year-round social clubs where they, you know, go whitewater rafting trips in the summer, and a lot of the organizations do cycling, and so you know, you those ones I think have much more of a presence. And then I think there's smaller ones, or you know, that it's hard for me to even find an email address to to get it, you know, to follow up with them. So I do think that they're aware of that, and that's the new president coming in. I believe her name is Peggy Allen. She seems to, you know, be kind of excited to, you know, have an infusion of just excitement in that sense. So.
And did you see a younger generation here and there? Was there, you know, hope for that next chapter?
Well, there's a group. It's kind of funny. There's a group called the Renegades, and it's basically the younger generation by, you know, about, you know, probably 20, 30 years younger than kind of the average NBS attendee. And what they do is, you know, it's a lot of people who don't necessarily belong to NBS clubs, but they it's run by people who used to be involved in the NBS. So there's definitely some overlap. And, you know, I think they have a kind of an uneasy alliance. You know, they do host a party together during the week, but essentially the Renegades find out every year where the NBS is going to hold their annual meeting the following year. And then they, you know, set up their own itinerary. And so, you know, if you go to a Renegades event, it's definitely a younger scene. It's much more of like a, you know, a nightlife scene. If you go to a NBS après-ski event, it's really fun and there's a band and there's a DJ, but, you know, they might be doing the electric slide. So, you know, it's a little bit just different generation. So, but it's interesting because the Renegades are actually really organized themselves and they have regional clubs of their own. And so even if they don't want to admit it, they're very NBS, you know, themselves. I think where they differ is that they don't believe in having to have, you know, necessarily the politics and the elections and the, you know, just sort of the things that, that used to be part and parcel of having a club or an organization that now a younger generation says, you know, we can cut out some of the excess here. So, you know, and at the same time, the NBS members are quick to say that a lot of the money, you know, a huge amount of the money they raise goes to charitable causes and goes to, you know, teaching young skiers and identifying young, you know, Black or otherwise diverse ski talent and elevating it. Their goal is to have a Black skier on an Olympic podium. And they'll say, you know, the Renegades don't have that sort of side to them. NBS is quick to say, we party with a purpose. They're just here for the party, you know, but that's, you know, the Renegades do give money to the NBS. So they kind of have this alliance. So it'll be interesting to see going forward how much overlap and, you know, friendship there is between the two groups.
Right. There's already some sort of complicated camaraderie there now. We'll have to see how it pans out, these rebels with the cause going to crash the party. But were there any details that you just couldn't fit into print that you wanted to? I know you mentioned just the editing process is the biggest difficulty here. When you come up with so many details and you've talked to so many people, it's almost hard to cut and it's hard to decide where to cut.
Yeah. Well, one of the former NBS presidents, Naomi Bryson, has written two books about the history of not just the NBS, but of, you know, Black skiing in America. And so just reading her books alone, there's so many stories about, the Detroit-based club is called Jim Dandy. And, you know, just stories about all these young, beautiful professionals, you know, in their 30s, and the year is 1965, and they drive to Colorado, you know, to go skiing, and it's just such fun stories about like just a totally different time, you know, and then kind of later when the NBS had first started, again hearing some of the stories about the parties that they would have. One of which, a famous party they would have every year, were the pajama parties. And the idea behind it was that they wanted to have like a theme party or a costume party. But when you go skiing, you're already packing so much stuff, you don't want to be also packing a costume. So let's go with pajama party because it's stuff that you're already packing and it doesn't take up a lot of space. So they would have these parties and, you know, you hear stories about how everyone was, you know, wearing negligees and just, you know, walking around drinking champagne. And one of the founders told me that one year, you know, a group of guys came and they weren't allowed in because they weren't in costume. They weren't wearing pajamas. So they went around the corner and took off all their clothes except for their boxers and came back and said, now we're wearing pajamas. And so they were allowed in. So, you know, stuff like that just made me laugh, and it was fun to hear about. You know, it kind of makes you realize why people are so involved in this, because they really do have so much fun and they have such long-term memories, And like I said, it's also all for a good cause. one of my big regrets from reporting was the day that I had to leave. I got invited to a pool party at one of the houses that I couldn't go to. So who knows what stories I would have gotten from that. But it's a really festive atmosphere. At the same time, there's also people there who you just see how much time they give to the organization because these poor people barely even get a chance to put on skis. They're so busy, you know, organizing and running around behind the scenes and doing all the things required to run such a big event.
It goes beyond just the ski hill, and that's a really important detail. What stuck with you from this assignment after you left? We're driving back home. What stuck with you after you finished writing this piece?
I think in addition to just how generous everyone was with their time and their stories, something that has kind of stuck with me was something that Diana Stark said in her sermon during the Gospel Fest, you know, my first morning, which was, you know, she was talking about the importance of, you know, always checking in with God no matter what. And she kind of just went off on a funny aside, comparing it to, you know, when you have some friend or some colleague who never talks to you and then all of a sudden sends you a frantic email when they need something. And she compared that with people who only, you know, pray when they need something. And I'm not like a super religious person or anything like that, but just from a general spiritual angle, that was just a comparison that stuck with me and just, I think, resonated throughout the week that I spent covering the story, just in terms of you could really see the depth of caring within the community and, you know, the way that people have known each other for years and through a lot of times in their lives. And, you know, it also, I think, just ties into more broadly, you know, how the organization's going to move forward and, you know, the support that they're going to give one another. And, so that was kind of something I came away with. It probably isn't something I expected to come away with after a week of skiing. You know, I think it says a lot about just the atmosphere and the people involved and the good works that they continue to do.
Well, Katie, it's been a pleasure having you on the Storytellers here for episode 2, where we're talking about the October issue. And thank you for your time today. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you. Hope to be back.
We've got Sierra Davis live in the studio. We're coming at you from Southern California Powder's headquarters. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Sam. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good, thanks. So in the October issue, the focus of this episode 2 of the Storytellers, you have the Latitudes piece, which is our travel narrative, and you went to Monarch Mountain in Colorado, your home state.
Yes.
How was it to travel to Monarch?
Traveling there was great. I was actually in Colorado about 2 or 3 weeks before I was supposed to go on this assignment, and a huge storm ended up rolling in. So I changed my flight and ended up hitchhiking a ride from Copper, where I was, up to Salida, a few hours away, and kind of scrapping the original plan and going with the storm.
That's sometimes the best way to do it.
Always.
If not always the best way to do it. So you got some good snow then?
Yeah, about 30 inches fell like the few days before I actually got there. But because the temperatures were so low, it was 10, 20 below the whole time I was there. It preserved a lot of that snow for a long time. Monarch's got a lot of good tree skiing, too, that helped to protect that. So I was able to cash in on that big storm, even though I wasn't there right at the beginning. There was still a lot of good snow to be skied.
Sure, and you had your guide, Ryan Kempfer, show you around all the stashes, the local stashes.
Yeah, so Ryan works at the mountain, actually, but I got connected to him through a friend of a friend of a friend, which was kind of the theme of the trip, a lot of connections were made that way. But Ryan was awesome. He showed me around the mountain. We had a ton of fun skiing. He's a really strong, fast skier. a very kind and generous person. It was great spending time with him.
He originally found the mountain on the way to a bluegrass festival.
Yeah, he did tell me that. Colorado gets a pretty good bluegrass scene rolling through different parts, especially mountain towns. And that's kind of how he stumbled on Salida and ended up working at the mountain. I think he's been there close to 10 years, maybe a little bit less, but he's been there quite a while.
And so Monarch, in a certain way, is off the beaten path.
Very much, yeah. It's not quite on the way to anywhere. it's not the easiest spot to get to.
Unless you're going to a bluegrass festival.
Yeah.
Then it's on the way.
But it's a really beautiful area. It's that area, that town of Salida, is known primarily for a lot of river rafting and guiding, but there's tons of great skiing there as well.
How does Monarch compare to skiing at other resorts?
Well, Monarch is, I would say, probably one of the most comfortable with itself ski areas. If you think of a ski area as having kind of a personality, Monarch's like the guy that comes in and is so comfortable with himself that you feel comfortable with yourself. If you've ever met someone like that, that's how I would describe the mountain and the people that work there, too.
The dude abides at Monarch Mountain.
Yeah. It's really basic in terms of operations. There's only a few lifts and there's not a big base area. There's one bar at the bottom. The rental lodge, if you could even call it that, is actually just a big yurt, like a tent that everything's run out of. So real bare bones operation, but that's not to say that anything is lacking there. I think they've made those choices consciously and that's part of their identity, and they're not really looking to change that. They're very comfortable with who they are.
Sure, and they seem to operate in an old-school manner, but that's working out for them.
Yes, they're very successful as far as from a business standpoint. I think they're also successful in the way that they deliver a really great ski experience for families or for people that are, they just want to ski. You know, there's no frills there. There's no other stuff or junk to take away your time or attention. There's just really great skiing. And I think that's what they do best. Something that's also great about Monarch is the free parking. It's one of those little things that skiers definitely bitch and moan about the high costs of skiing that you can sometimes find. And you can pull right up to the bottom there and park for free. And that's pretty nice little welcome when you first get there.
Sure. Skiers love free stuff anyway. But how much does a lift ticket cost for a day there?
I was able to get a $40 ticket every day. If you have a pass to anywhere else in the world, if you have a season pass somewhere, you can show that and get a $40 lift ticket, which is pretty awesome.
What are some details from Monarch that you would have loved to include in the piece but just couldn't fit? Is there anything that you were yearning to include?
Sure, yeah. There's always so much that doesn't make it into the story, and that's always kind of the challenge for us, is pulling out the best parts and what works best for the magazine, but there's always lots of tidbits that don't make it. I caught rides up and down the mountain with different people that worked there, different local skiers. Just felt like a really cool community that is very close-knit with each other, yet was so willing and almost eager to bring a total stranger into that mix.
Any difficulties putting the story together? Any hitches in the plan?
Yeah, I think it's always hard when you're on assignment and you kind of are creating this storyline in your head of what that's going to look like, and then when you actually sit down to write it and it goes through multiple editors and getting feedback from them and it kind of taking a different direction than maybe you thought it was going to, that can be hard to do. But I think, you know, we are fortunate to work with such good editors here and other people on staff that really help to bring out the best version of the story, so I'm really thankful for that. But it is always hard to kind of, there's so many different narratives you could tell, and honing in on the right one is hard.
What was the theme in Monarch that we ended up focusing on that our readers can hear more about in the piece?
I think the headline of the story, An Unrefined Nature, says a lot about what Monarch is, and that's not a negative connotation at all. I think that's their strong suit and a positive thing about places like that, that are unafraid to be who they are and are not trying to bigger, better, faster, more, more, more. They're very content to do what they've been doing. And Monarch operates on 100% all natural snow for good reason. The snow there is awesome. And the lifts are slow, and it causes you to take a breather and just enjoy the incredible scenery. I mean, you can see really, really beautiful views there on a clear day and just take five and enjoy talking to the person on the lift next to you. And I'm kind of in a rush generally in life.
Aren't we all these days?
Yeah. And so it's awesome to just be forced to enjoy the moment and catch your breath and, you know, rip as many laps as you can there. The terrain is really steep and really fun, but the runs are quick. It's not a lot of vertical, but you can get a lot in, and just being forced to take that downbeat is much appreciated.
Yeah, the moment matters at Monarch Mountain. The present moment matters.
Yeah, if you just want to ski, you want good snow, it's an awesome place to be. Absolutely.
Amazing. So let's shift gears now.
Okay.
You also helped put together a first ever for Powder, the Ski Town Hairdown. What is the Ski Town Hairdown, Sierra?
Well, Sam, I'm glad you asked. we have done a contest in years past called the Ski Town Throwdown, where skiers could vote on the best, like their best local ski town. We did that for a few years. It was a really fun project, but it definitely ran its course. And we were looking for something new to do that was fun and ridiculous and kind of poke fun at ourselves a little bit. And so was born the Ski Town Hairdown, where we had 8 pro skiers. We had Marcus Kasten, who was our winner this year by a landslide.
Rah. Congratulations to Marcus, the champion of flow.
Yes, he's also an incredible skier and a great person. And he was followed by Cody Townsend and Johnny Collinson, and then also in the contest was Todd Legarry, Julian Carr, Nick McNutt, Sage Catabriga-Losa, of course, and Coulter Hinchcliffe. So thanks to those guys for participating and being willing to make fools of themselves and have a good time with it. They all had such awesome attitudes about it. They were able to laugh at themselves and each other. There was some good smack talk and banter between those guys that made the contest really fun.
A lesson in humility. And we got some pretty crazy submission videos. It was a lot of fun receiving these. Marcus in particular had some professional quality production going on. Johnny Collinson with some leather pants, NSFW. And Cody Townsend caught my eye because he was putting every condiment from the fridge in his hair.
Yes. We had asked each contestant to submit like a short video showing why their hair made them a better skier. We all know that you cannot be a good skier without good hair. It's a fact.
Just falls into place.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. So we asked them to create a video that demonstrated their hair in action. Got quite the range, which you can still watch all those videos on powder.com. But yeah, Marcus blew us away. Tim Jones helped him create that video, and it was probably one of the best ski films I think we're going to see this year, Sam.
I know we had First Chair Festival this past weekend in Salt Lake City on September 17th, co-hosted by New Schoolers, and we had some movie premieres, but you know what was really missing were these Ski Town Hairdown promos.
Yeah, maybe next year we'll have to find a way to work those into the film festival.
What was the prize for winning all of this?
Eternal glory and bragging rights. Which there is no better prize in skiing.
And maybe a golden comb, something like that. can we look forward to it next year?
Yeah, I think there's some potential here to expand it. It was just a lot of fun. I think we do a lot of really serious, really powerful acts of journalism, if you want to call them that. Or, you know, we do a lot of make a lot of serious contributions to the world of skiing, but it's so important to not take yourself too seriously, because at the end of the day, skiing is fun, doing it with your friends is fun, and that was kind of the attitude that we wanted to have going into this project.
Awesome, Sierra. It was a pleasure having you on The Storytellers, and we'll do it again soon.
Great. Thank you, Sam.
So we have Leslie Anthony on the show, a former managing editor at Powder from 1995 to 1997. So, Leslie's on the line. Where are you calling from today?
I'm calling from Toronto, Canada. And I don't live here, but this is where I grew up, and this is where I was living when I got involved with Powder back in the day, and I moved from here to California to be managing editor, so I guess it's a good little circle to close that I'm sitting here now talking to you.
We've asked the editors, past editors in this October issue, to write for our morpheme section of the magazine, which is essays on skiing and what does it mean to ski, reflections on the sport. And in the beginning of this piece, you mentioned as a young kid you were skiing alone, and I've always felt that there's been a difference in skiing alone versus skiing in a group. That sense of community, friendship, riding the chairlift with your friends. On the other hand, if you're alone, you can meet some new people. What's it like in your eyes doing those two different types of skiing? Do you enjoy one more than the other?
That's a really good question, Sam, because in point of fact, I've written a lot about both types of skiing, about skiing alone and skiing with groups. And in recent years, even, I've written even more about skiing alone because I find myself doing that perhaps more often or perhaps because I've gotten to the point where, for, you know, whatever kind of reasons are existing in my life, like opportunity or time or whatever, I do find myself skiing alone a bit. And I say I prefer the ski mission, the solo ski mission. I find it's a bit more fulfilling for me. It's something that I realize now after all these years that I've learned to use to my benefit, not just to enjoy the skiing, but I get a lot of thinking done while I'm skiing. I work things out, kind of like a lot of people do with running as well. So I will often run out the door to go skiing and then realize that the reason I'm doing that is because I was frustrated with something I was working on. I needed some space, you know, creating somewhere for the thoughts to come into my mind. And it always seems to work with skiing. Now, having said that, I really enjoy that. Of course, I also love skiing in a group, skiing with friends. But I find when you do that, if it's a day on the mountain, you know, lift serve mountain, there's much more fun and frivolity, not paying too much attention to the environment as much as you are the social dynamics, which is great as well. And then if you're with a group in the backcountry, you know, things change so that it becomes both a social enterprise and a safety enterprise, and that group becomes, being with that group becomes important to you for a whole new set of reasons. So I appreciate those as well, and that's kind of how it would fall out for me.
Did you have a favorite assignment from your time working at Powder?
I kind of had this attitude, or I wouldn't call it an attitude. I had an appreciation of what I was doing, such that every new assignment was the best assignment ever. It sort of felt like that. But if I did have to say, pick one or two, I would say that the soul of skiing, this is before I was actually working there, but I was a contributing editor. I was living in Toronto, and Steve Casimiro and Rob Story came up with this idea to send five writers together with five photographers to five separate destinations to find the soul of skiing. And they basically just told us to show up at the airport and pick up an envelope with tickets in it. And we didn't know where we were going or what was going on. And this was in the days when you could do that, because you could never do that now. And so myself and photographer Henry Georgiou showed up at the Toronto airport, picked up our airline tickets, and we flew to the ticket routed us through Los Angeles to meet with the editors, and then we were off to Alaska.
Oh my.
Yeah, but this is like before Alaska was even on the radar of in the sense that we know it now, or the sense that it came to be known with the Chugach and the heli skiing and all this kind of stuff. This was an assignment where we were sent to a tiny little ski area outside the community of Juneau with absolutely no instructions other than find the soul of skiing. And, you know, it was a very funny situation because it was the first story that I hadn't pitched to them, that they had just handed me. And it was something that I was, you know, at first really nervous about. And I was like, oh my God, like, I got to make a lot of notes. I got to talk to a lot of people. And, you know, I thought this is like serious. You know, this isn't the usual goofing kind of trip that I take where I just enjoy myself and find a way to turn that. You know, it was funny. I was in a bar in Juneau, or maybe at the ski area, I can't remember. And I had my notebook out, and I'd only been there an hour. And, all of a sudden I realized, I don't do this. Like, this is ridiculous. I have to get out of the way of this story. And I put the notebook away and just went back to enjoying myself the way I normally would, and meeting people and hanging out with people and learning what the scene was there and everything. And it was a glorious issue. These five different experiences that these writer-photographer teams had were incredibly divergent, but they did all turn up elements of the same thing that, you know, attracted people to skiing, that built communities around skiing. And it was a real testament to the guys to come up with such a great idea, to pull it off, you know, to do such a good job on the issue. And it also was a big learning experience for me. You know, I think if I often wonder if I didn't have that experience, would I have turned into one of those idiot reporters who wanders around with a notebook out in front of his face all the time and never actually sees what's going on? So that was fun. Plus, that was my first trip to Alaska.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Storytellers in this episode 2. We'll be back next month to talk about the November issue, our travel issue. Who knows where it'll take us. But for now, thanks so much to my guests, Katie Baker, Sierra Davis, and Leslie Anthony. It was a pleasure having all of you on the show. I'm your host, Sam Taggart, and we'll catch you next time.